Hey everybody, it's Britt, lead pastor at Sunridge. Welcome back to our teaching podcast. You know, we are on a mission here at Sunridge to help people find and follow Jesus. We believe in the good news that Jesus welcomes all, regardless of how far you feel from God. That means we're a great starting point to explore Christianity or to sink your spiritual roots deep as a devoted Jesus follower. If you'd like to know more about us, just check out our website at sunridgechurch.org. And of course, we'd love to have you drop in anytime for a visit to learn and worship along with us. And now, here's our teaching for this week.
Good morning, everybody. Whether you're joining us online or you're right here in our building, I just want to say welcome to Sunridge. You guys can have a seat. If you don't know me, if you're new, my name is Britt. I serve here as the lead pastor. And like Jed mentioned, this is a great first Sunday for you to be here because you get to meet us right after church and we feed you. And it's like filet mignon and lobster and it might look like a sandwich, but actually it's, filet mignon or something. So we would love for you to just spend a few minutes and so that we can talk with you. We're not trying to sell you on anything. We just want to hang out, get to know you, and let you get to know what our church is all about. If you're at that stage, we would love for you to stop by. If you're just checking it out and you want to remain anonymous, that's awesome too. So you're invited. Have you heard about speed friending? It's like the platonic version of speed dating, and it's a place where people can meet and start friendships. And events vary, but the classic speed event looks a lot like a speed dating event where you have these tables and chairs set up in rows. And people sit down across from another person, and they use their allotted time to answer questions with one another. And eventually a bell or a timer goes off, and you have to move on to the next person. And sometimes they even do these on Zoom, I've read. So at the end of the event, you create a scorecard, the people that you would like to pursue in friendship, a little further. You might want to hang out with them again. And with loneliness at such a high level today, I'm for anything that connects people, truly. But we know that no meaningful friendship happens in a speedy way, right? Relationships take time. You can't rush them. Friendships are like a fine wine or a good smoked barbecue. You just have to let it run. You have to let it simmer and eventually become something awesome. And as we've been talking in this series that we're calling Friending, relationships are vital to human beings. It's a feature that God has designed in us. It's not a bug. God said it's not good for man to be alone. So we're designed to be in relationship. And so this series, Friending, is about how offering ourselves in relationship may be one of the most profound actions that we can take to impact others. And so far in Friending, we've talked about a variety of human interactions where impactful and meaningful relationships can form. So we've talked about friending the lonely. We've talked about friending the poor and the powerless. And last week we talked about friending children and seniors. And today I want to talk about another relationship circle that we are a part of. It's your oikos. Now that might be a new word to you, but I want to talk about friending your oikos. And that's a Greek word that is in your New Testament, and it appears 120 times, and it's translated different ways. I'm going to run through some of those. Now, first of all, it's house. Oikos is a house, like a literal structure, like when Jesus invited himself to dinner at Matthew's house, his oikos. Mark 2:15, while Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house. That's oikos, but it's also used more metaphorically. It can be translated household. Like when Lydia is converted by the Apostle Paul in Acts 16:15, when she and the members of her household were baptized, she invited us to her home. So in the first century, your household would include your husband and wife, your kids, extended family, your servants, everyone who lived under that roof. Sometimes oikos is translated community, like a group of people. So after Jesus healed the demon-possessed man who lived in the town cemetery, he told them in Mark 5:19, go home. Go home to your own people. So that's oikos. It also, oikos denotes comfortability. Like there are just people that you're comfortable with. In Ephesians 3:17, Paul wrote that Christ will make his home in your hearts as you trust in him. And that make his home is it's a compound word that includes on one side of it oikos. And the other word means to settle down. So some of your Bible translations may have translated this way, that Christ will settle down and make his home in your hearts. So these are the different ways that this word appears in your New Testament. Now, there's a pastor and author that I know named Tom Mercer. He used to pastor at a very large church up in the desert area when I worked for the fire department. I think I've mentioned a few times I used to be a fireman. But when I worked up there, I would attend church there when I was there on a Sunday. And Tom Mercer has written extensively about this concept of oikos. And here's what he says. Your oikos is a group of 8 to 15 people with whom you share life most closely. Your sphere of greatest influence. That's from a book that he wrote called 8 to 15. The world is smaller than you think. It's a great book. You should read it. Your oikos are the people that you can count on and that can count on you. And it can include your family, but not always, not all of your family, but it definitely includes those people that are in your closest circle, your friends. And you know how rare and valuable friends like this are. The writer of Proverbs said it this way in Proverbs 26, many will say they are loyal friends, but who can find one who is truly reliable? Now, on the back of your note sheet, don't take time to do it now, but like later when you go home, there's a little box, and I just want you to write down who you think who are the five closest people to you. Who's in your oikos? And as you do it, I just want to like preload you. If you struggle to name five close friends, you're not without company. In fact, you might be the majority. According to the American Sociological Review, the average adult in the U.S. has only two close friends. Now, you might say, well, that's pretty good, Brett. I'm content with just two close friends. But what you may not know is that's actually a downward trend, that 25 years ago, the average person would have identified six of their closest friends. And here's another little factoid about declining relationships. Recently, research has found that starting at age 25, we lose more friends than we make every year. Isn't that good news? Aren't you glad you came to church? And yeah, hey, if you're in your 30s right now, listen to this. Wow. Let me put my dentures back in. Calm down here. Sociologists. Wow. We'll cut that from the tape, right, fellas? And psychologists, I said that right. Can I get a round of applause for that? Thank you. Are calling your 30s the decade friends disappear. See, in high school and in college, we have plenty of time and opportunity to make friends, but there are some changes that typically happen around your mid-20s that affect that. You get married, and you have kids, and then you get a job, and you may have to move from your circle of friends, or you get promoted, and it demands more of you. It might require a move, and then there's all your kids' activities that you're involved in. But the truth of the matter is that having this vibrant circle of relationships plays a significant role in our overall health, in everything. People with strong social connections have a reduced risk of many, many health issues. And studies have found that older adults who have meaningful relationships live longer. So the Bible's already told us this. In Ecclesiastes, Solomon, who was known, you know, the Bible calls him the wisest man who ever lived. In Ecclesiastes 4:9, he wrote, two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm. But how can one be warm alone? A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. Solomon says we're much better off if we're in a circle of relationships. If we're isolated, we're vulnerable. We have no one to cover our six, to watch our back. And we are a better version of ourselves when we have people in our lives. We all need an oikos. But not just an oikos. It has to be the right oikos. We need the right people in our lives, like Proverbs 13:20 says, walk with the wise and become wise, because a companion of fools will suffer harm. You know, someone once wisely said, you are the average of your five closest friends. And if you think about that, that's true. For instance, if out of your five friends, you have three who are making good decisions and two that are not, then it's likely that on average, you're making wise choices. Not all, but mostly. If four of your friends smoke weed every day, you're probably smoking weed every day. If two out of your five friends drink too much, then you probably don't drink too much that often. But it happens. If three out of your five friends are wise with their money, then you're probably you make pretty wise financial decisions. If only one of your friends is truly pursuing God, then it's probable that you're not either. On the other hand, if four of your five friends go to church regularly, then it's likely that you do too. See, our relationships affect us. We become like who we hang out with. So what does that mean? What are the implications for your marriage or your financial decisions or your spiritual life? What does it mean about the direction your life is headed right now? See, often our oikos determines our destiny. And this premise of friending that we've been talking about this summer is that our relationships profoundly affect every part of us, but certainly our spiritual formation, and that we affect others. And if that's true, and we've seen how the Bible reinforces that over and over, then what kind of friends should be in my oikos, in my circle? And I want to spend a few minutes talking about that this morning. And what I want to do is I want to look at one person in the Bible who had three different friends in their life that it's clear that these friends shaped him. It's David, King David, also as the shepherd David. And David had three relationships that profoundly affected his life, and I think that we can learn something from those relationships that he had. So here's three friends that every person needs in their oikos from the life of David. First of all, you need a Samuel, a friend who makes you better. You need someone who makes you better. And the context here is that God has removed his blessing from King Saul, and he sends a prophet, a religious leader at that time, named Samuel to anoint the king, to find this new king. And God directs him to the household of Jesse, a man who has eight sons. And Jesse's kind of freaked out that Samuel showed up at his house. It's kind of like if the pastor showed up at your house one day unannounced. And he's thinking, what's the prophet doing at my house today? Does he know we really tied one on here last night? Did he not get my offering for the synagogue? I mean, why is he here? And Jesse asked Samuel, am I in trouble? And Samuel at this point is trying to keep his real purpose on the down low. So he says, no, I'm here to offer a sacrifice for your family, but he's really there to identify the next king. And each one of Jesse's sons shows up, and Samuel looks them over, and they're all good-looking, strong boys, and he sees the oldest, Eliab, and he thinks to himself, oh, this is surely the one. And then in 1 Samuel 16:7, the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider the appearance of his height, for I've rejected him. The Lord does not look on the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And then Samuel meets all the other older boys, and with each one, God says, nope, that's not the one. Then the youngest, David, who's been out tending sheep, who's probably only about 15 at the time, when he shows up, God whispers to Samuel, rise and anoint him. This is the one. What's interesting here is that no one at this gathering had seen this kind of potential in David, not even his own dad, and certainly not David. And when Samuel anointed him in this time, this is like Samuel was saying to him, God will do more through you than you can ever imagine. That single affirmation from Samuel to David changed the course of his destiny, and it sustained him through some of the worst times in his life, if you're familiar with the story of David. So the proverb is true about the power of our words. Proverbs 18:21, the tongue has the power of life and death. Now let's get super practical here. For most of us, who are our friends? Who do we hang out with? Most of them we find by chance, right? It's someone we work with, someone we met at the gym, moms who have kids on the same soccer team, someone we sit next to in class, and that's all great. But let me ask you something. Do you have friends in your life today that make you better? Friends who affirm things in you that not even you can see. Do your friends make you better at the things you want to be better at? I mean, it might be making your golf game better or your pickleball game, right? But do the couples you hang out with, do they make your marriage better? Are you with the friends you hang out with, do they make you better at your job, at your career? Because they're in your life, are you a better dad or a better mom? Are you a better leader or volunteer? And after you've spent time with them, do you feel uplifted? You know what I'm saying? Like, because you were with them, like, I don't know, you're kind of buoyed up. Do you look forward to being with them because they have this kind of influence on you? Proverbs 27:17 says, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. So your oikos should include friends who make you better. Secondly, you should have a friend like Jonathan, a friend who draws you toward God, who draws you toward God. Jonathan, if you don't know, he is the son of King Saul, the first king of Israel, as we mentioned earlier. And after David had slayed the giant, Goliath, this Philistine warrior, the Philistines are entirely routed, and David and Jonathan, after that, become fast friends. 1 Samuel 18:1 says, Jonathan became one in spirit with David. And then everyone, including Saul himself, they all loved David at first. But pretty soon, David's remarkable talents begin to emerge. He can do it all. He's a musician. He's a warrior. He's a poet. He's like a true Renaissance man. And soon the people are praising David more than Saul. And in, it goes on, it says, when the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with timbrels and lyres. And as they danced, they sang, Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. Good for David. But maybe not, right? Don't raise your hand, but have any of you been better at your job than a jealous boss? How did that go for you? Well, Saul becomes more and more jealous of David, so jealous that he threatens to kill him more than once. So this is going to really test this relationship that Jonathan and David have. Jonathan is Saul's son, remember? Possibly in line for the throne. But David is his best friend, and he's in the right. He's done nothing wrong but be a man of integrity. And what's remarkable, which, you know, we don't even have time to dig into this, but what's remarkable is that Jonathan was able to parse all those conflicting loyalties and to do the right thing. And during this time, David is on the run from Saul, and he has a secret meeting with Jonathan. And Saul's son, Jonathan, went to meet David at Heresh, and he helped him find strength in God. What did he do? Say it out loud. He helped them find strength in God, right? Every one of us needs a friend who will do that for us. There are some people that you've spent time with that you didn't just have great laughs or fun, but you feel spiritually refreshed after being with them. You're stronger in your faith having been with them. Someone, maybe they pray with you. I mean, right then you mentioned something and said, I'm going to pray with you. And I know that can be kind of weird right in that moment, but they do that. Or maybe they call you the next day and they say, hey, I prayed for you last night about what we talked about. Is this someone in your life that they spark spiritual conversation, that they're somehow, you know, and I don't mean overboard, like they're saying the Lord this, the Lord that, every other word, but like somehow when you're together, you talk about your life in Christ and your faith. And some people, they just have a way of elevating your thoughts to what God is doing in your life. You know, Paul wrote to the believers in Thessalonica, In 1 Thessalonians 5:11, he said, encourage one another and build each other up. So your oikos should have people in it that draw you closer to God. You need a Samuel to make you better, and you need a Jonathan to draw you toward God, but then you need another friend. You need a Nathan, a friend who tells you the truth. Nathan is another friend that David had, although at this moment, I don't think that he would have called Nathan his friend. But he may have been one of the best friends that David ever had because he was willing to tell him the truth. And we know that sometimes telling somebody the truth, it hurts. It hurts you to say it, and it hurts them to hear it. So, and it carries risk in a relationship, right? So here's a story. The Bible says that David was a man after God's own heart, but one day he took his eyes off God and he put them on Bathsheba, and he committed adultery with her, and she became pregnant, and that was a big problem because her husband Uriah was away at battle, so there was going to be some splaining to do around here. And so David, what he does is he has the commander of the army have the soldiers back away from Uriah during the heat of the battle so that he's killed in action. And it happens. And so David thinks, secret kept. Now he can have Bathsheba for his very own, problem solved. But Nathan is a prophet, and like Samuel, he knows what time it is. So he goes to David and he says, let me tell you a story. Once upon a time, there was a rich man who had tons of cattle and sheep. He had everything anyone could ever dream of. And then there was a poor man that lived nearby who had one little lamb. Well, one day the rich man had these guests come over. And he was so self-centered and greedy that instead of preparing a meal with one of his sheep, he took the one lamb from the poor man and served it up to his guests. Ain't that something? Nathan asked. And in 2 Samuel 12:5, when David hears a story, it says that he burned with anger against the man and said to Nathan, as surely as the Lord lives, the man who did this must die. He must pay for that lamb four times over because he did such a thing and had no pity. Then Nathan said to David, you are the man. Now, that's not like you the man, David, okay? Let's get that straight. But he's saying, you're that guy. This story is about you. And keep in mind, David is the king, and he can ignore anything Nathan says to him. He could even put him in prison or have him executed or banish him for having said something like this to the king. So this is a big risk for Nathan. But fortunately, David takes Nathan's words to heart, and he repents. And if you know the story of David, this is a remarkable turning point for him, and it changes the course of his life. Now, if Nathan had not been willing to do that, there's no telling what David would have become. We need people in our lives to tell us the truth, the hard things. Like, hey, man, you think you drink a little too much? Or, is that always the way you talk to your wife? You know, You complain about your husband and criticize him all the time. Is it that bad? You know, I haven't seen you in church in a while. Are you okay? Everything all right? We all need a friend in our life that will tell us the truth, that will risk that relationship in order to save us. You know, Paul wrote to the Ephesians in 4:15, speak the truth in love. That's a key point, right? So that we will grow to become, in every respect, the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. That's friending our oikos, surrounding ourselves with people who are going to make us better, bring us closer to God, and are going to say the hard things to us when they need to be said. Now let me say some hard things to you. Some of you have the opposite of what I've been talking about. If our friends truly shape us, then some of you, your oikos is leading you somewhere no good. If you keep things the way they are, your future might be jail, DUI, addiction, divorce, bankruptcy, no relationship with your kids. But for a lot of us, that might be too dramatic. Maybe, though, your oikos is leading you to a very self-centered life or a lukewarm relationship with God or being in debt up to your eyeballs or pursuing everything but God in your life. And some of you, like we're a wide variety of folks here today, some of you, even talking about this, it's just discouraged you. You know, you're thinking, I don't have an oikos. I don't have a Samuel. I don't have a Jonathan. I don't have a Nathan. I don't have friends in my life that will make me better, that will pull me toward God or will tell me the truth. And maybe you've tried in the past and you say, like, it's just not working. And I want to say to you, don't let that awareness that that's absent in your life to discourage you, but let it be a wake-up call. Remember how we've said throughout this series, you show me your friends and I'll show you your future? Maybe it's time for some of us to invest our lives in a very intentional way towards something higher and capture a lasting vision of who we want to become. And if you're asking, how do I find friends that will build into my life? Do I try speed friending? Maybe. But here's a few final words to those of you that you say, like, I'd like to change this part of my life. Just three simple thoughts. It's not rocket science. Number one, don't give up. Don't give up. You have to keep putting yourself out there. But you might need to change the place where you're putting yourself out there too. You know, maybe the frat party or the local watering hole isn't the place to find these kind of friends, right? Or cruising Copper Canyon for you river rats. It's not likely, I mean, these are not bad things in and of itself, but it's not likely that you're going to find the kind of friends we're talking about there. Someone said to me recently, you know, we tried, we just couldn't connect at Sunridge. And I asked, well, did you join a group, Bible study, did you come to the men's huddle, do you play pickleball, are you part of Sowers? And they said, no. I just wanted to say, well, you see, you have to try, and you can't give up. I mean, there's so many opportunities here to find people of like mind and like faith. We have small groups, we have Bible studies, we have these events, and we don't just do them because we don't know what else to do. We do them so that people can connect. I'm going to cough. Just kidding. Sorry, I'm raspy again. I don't know what's going on. I think it's those Camel No Filters, but they're wreaking havoc on my throat. Just kidding. Just kidding. Those, many of you know me. I don't smoke. You got to get out of the house or the apartment. And you say, well, I did that. All right. Well, then do it again. And keep doing it. Keep putting yourself in proximity to the people you need in your oikos. Secondly, be the inviter. Be the inviter. Look for people who need relationship rather than being the one just sitting back waiting for a relationship to happen, for someone to notice you and then invite you in. I know it's challenging for some of you, but, you know, step out of that. Be the inviter. Invite someone to lunch. You don't have to pay. Have someone over. Host a family park day. Get the kids out there. Let them run around. I mean, there's so many ways you can do it. And, you know, if you're someone you look, you're here at Sunridge and you say, well, there's nothing here for me. It's like, I don't, you know, there's nothing here for you. Well, then there's probably a bunch of other yous out there. So start the thing for all you yous. You know, that's how it happens. And, you know, just a couple months ago, we have a new couple in our church. You know, they love Sunridge, and he loves golf. And he started a golf group. He came to me and he said, hey, could I start a group of, like, people who like to golf? Because I love to golf, and I just think golf is a great way. Those of you who are golfers, you know, like, isn't just about, like, smoking cigars and drinking whiskey. You know, you actually get to talk a little bit, and you can hook that snake on your partner. Anybody seen these videos? Out of control, anyway. And he said, you know, like, golfing's a great way to just hang out. I'm like, absolutely. And, you know, he set a number last month, and the golf group totally filled up. So find your other yous and be the inviter. I'm going to ask the band to come up as I cover this last point, which is be the friend. Be the friend. It's different than being the inviter. Be the friend. In order to have a certain kind of friend, you have to be that kind of friend yourself. I like what Andy Stanley has said about dating and looking for your person. I think it applies to your oikos too. He said, be the person you're looking for is looking for. Let that sink in. Be the person you're looking for is looking for. And I would just change that to say, you know, be the friend that the friend you're looking for is looking for. If friending is one of the most powerful acts we can do as human beings, one of the most powerful things we can do to impact other people, then be the Samuel. Be the Jonathan. Be the Nathan. Be the David in someone else's life. Be that person that everyone needs in their oikos. Friend the lonely. Friend the poor and the powerless. Friend the children and the seniors. And definitely friend your oikos. Because everything is riding on it. Everything. You know, Jesus had, we've been talking about horizontal relationships in this series, but Jesus had a lot to say about that, but he also talked about a vertical relationship that we have. And he said to his disciples one day, you know, you guys are not my servants. Like, you're in my little rabbi school, but you're not just my students. You're not just people that help me do what I'm trying to accomplish. He said, you're my friends. He had a different kind of relationship with them. And I think, as we've been saying, that God designed human beings with this need for relationship, but it's God that designed us. And so in order to become that, to obtain, to have these things in your life, it's necessary that we have that relationship with God, and that happens through His Son, Jesus Christ. All of us are broken. None of us are perfect. All of us need God. And you can initiate a relationship with God by simply asking Him into your life, telling Him that you need Him, and then begin to let Him make those changes in you through His people, through Scripture, through His Holy Spirit, so that you become the kind of person that God has designed you to be, and that you can be that for other people. Because we all need an oikos. We all need the God of that oikos in our lives. Thanks for listening today. Let's stand and worship together.
Hey everybody, it's Britt again. Thanks for listening. If you need something, if you have a question, or you'd just like us to pray for you, you can reach us through email, info@sunridgechurch.org. We hope you'll listen in again next week, but in the meantime, keep helping people find and follow Jesus.